This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back. Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by Amanda Vinicky from Illinois Public Radio, WUIS-FM in Springfield. My special New Year's special guest co-host.
Kicking off 2016 in a fun way. Huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, because we're talking about politics and we need to bring some fun to it. Wanted to play a couple of cuts here that obviously deal with the Republican front runner for the presidential nomination, Donald Trump. Jeb Bush calling Trump, kind of becoming a theme now, calling Trump the chaos candidate.
Donald Trump is not serious about being a candidate. He's a great politician. He fills the space. He's the chaos candidate, and he'd be the chaos president of the United States.
And for his part, Donald Trump tells NBC that in a campaign against Hillary Clinton, that Bill Clinton's marital infidelity is fair game.
If she is going to play the woman card, because I'll do more for women than Hillary Clinton is going to do for women, including the safety of our country, which is good for everybody. But if she's going to play, which she started about a week ago, talking about, oh, he mentioned, and you know, the whole thing, playing up the women's card very, very strongly. And if she's going to play that game, and if he's going to be out there campaigning, then he's certainly fair game. And I think just about everybody agrees with me on that. This is a person who, you know, he's going to be out, and I like the fact that he's campaigning for her. He failed in 2008. He failed really badly. He frankly did a very poor job in campaigning, if you want to know the truth. And perhaps he'll do well or perhaps he'll do poorly. But if she's going to play the woman card, it's all fair game.
That's Donald Trump. Well, joining me on the phone is Robin Johnson, member of the political science faculty at Monmouth College and host of Talking Politics that airs in Burlington, Iowa. Robin, thanks for getting up with me this morning.
Well, good morning, Rick. Amanda, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Well, speaking of Trump, you folks out at Monmouth College did a poll of millennials, of young adults, before the Christmas holiday break, and basically asked a number of questions involving feelings of young adults about Donald Trump.
Yeah, we zeroed in on his plan regarding Muslim immigrants, and what we're doing, and this is the brainchild of a colleague of mine at Monmouth, Joanne Gotti, who you met when you were on campus, former Emmy Award winning producer at NBC, and he developed this idea to poll millennials, the group of young voters that there's so much attention focused on. And we're doing this. We don't see any other evidence of people doing this, but we zeroed in on this one issue of Trump's plan, and there was overwhelming opposition to it among young millennials. And it shows also that Trump's favorable numbers are underwater among this group, and that he's not viewed very positively. So he's got a lot of work to do in this group, and of course, President Obama did very well among them, and we also tested a hypothetical matchup between Trump and Clinton. And Clinton's winning, but not in the numbers that she's going to need to in this group to approach Obama's numbers.
Well, and that's one thing I wonder about. And, you know, every election cycle we hear about, you know, this is going to be the emergence of the strength of the youth vote. And, you know, as an old grizzled veteran, I tend to discount that a lot of times. But certainly, you know, the numbers increased under Obama when he was running. And, you know, this kind of goes to an even larger question about looking at Hillary Clinton, should she be the Democratic nominee, about that issue of an enthusiasm gap between Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, I think, you know, Obama, the big number on Obama when they went back and looked at the actual numbers was the turnout in the young voter group only increased slightly, but the share of vote increased dramatically for Obama running as the Democratic candidate. He got, I think, 66% of the vote the first time he ran, and it was down closer to 60% the second time. That was the big change in voting patterns among young voters. This time is another old grizzled veteran like you. I just detect that there's not much enthusiasm right now as there was under Obama, and I would tend to think that turnout will certainly not exceed the levels of the last two elections, and in fact may be lower. There just doesn't seem to be, if there's anybody driving them exciting young voters, I would say it's Trump and Sanders at this point.
Right, the outsiders. And,
right.
And you know, obviously with millennials, with that age group, the economy is still very difficult for them to navigate. The jobs coming out of college aren't necessarily there, or the jobs that they were planning on entering as a field from study in college aren't there. And the income inequality issue that Sanders drives, that I can see that for Democrats. And on the other side with Trump, you have, you know, kind of that same kind of anger manifesting itself as seen by overall Trump supporters.
Yeah, the person that's been really hurt by this is Rand Paul. In previous years when I've taught at Monmouth and interacted with my students, Ron Paul was the favorite among the Republicans. A lot of young voters, especially young men, were really attracted to Ron Paul, who, of course, is Rand Paul's father. This time, I think Trump's just sucked all the air out of the room, and a candidate like Rand Paul, who I think was at the beginning, was on the cover of Time magazine and was looked at as somebody that could really shake up the political lay of the land, has just kind of faded away with his poll numbers in the 3% and 4%. So, yeah, Paul's not generating much excitement either this time around, and it is a lot of this is driven by anger, especially working class voters, which who feel that they've been kind of ignored by both administrations and both parties in recent years.
Ignored or even, you know, talked down to some, I think that's part of it. It's with Trump, it's he's fed into this frustrations and sure, you know, diss everybody, I can do it better, what have you. But it's also refreshing, I think, for people. And that's part of what Rand Paul had done somewhat, but more walked the line of a traditional politician. Bernie Sanders, same thing a bit, but of just saying, hey, I don't care about, for example, when Bernie Sanders in the debate, I don't care about the Hillary emails and people applauded
yeah.
her damn email, you know, just speaking like a real human being versus the catalog politician that you keep on going back to. It seems as if there's a lot of that. And I don't know, feeding into the new world of today where everything's shared on Facebook and Twitter and what have you. And there's this desire for real, even when it probably isn't very real.
Well, although Rand Paul did try to appeal to younger voters over those issues of like smartphone privacy, data collection, social media, all of that kind of thing. I mean, he made a well-calculated move to try to broaden the party base, and even going to universities that were of obvious liberal orientation.
Yeah, he's got a plan and to try to recruit young voters on campuses across Iowa. And this is one thing, if there's going to be a surprise, Rand Paul could be a guy that could rise up if this is successful. He's got some very talented people helping him. And again, they're focusing on those young voters, trying to get back the enthusiasm that was there for his father, you know, 4 and 8 years ago. So I think that's a possibility. I just see, you know, Donald Trump just says what a lot of people think. And I mean, a lot of people are scared by that. But I think, you know, I attended his rally in Burlington when he was in town in October. And I looked around and the room was packed. The hall was packed. And there wasn't many people in suits and ties and nice clothing. It was working class. They just had to look like they were upset. They were angry. And it was interesting. He asked how many were from across the river in Illinois, and about a third of the crowd was. So I think he's going to have some support in Illinois as well. And I think Sanders captures that as well. A lot of the Democratic base is angry because they feel that not enough was accomplished under President Obama, especially when they had control of both houses of Congress. And, of course, the Republican base is still upset by some of the actions of the Bush administration and also the inability of Republicans to get anything done now that they've controlled both houses of Congress. So is it enough to form a majority? I don't think so, and I still think that, you know, people will vote their aspirations. They'll vote their hopes over their fears. like President Reagan, to some degree President Clinton. But it certainly, I think it's a manifestation of a group of people in this country who feel like the economy hasn't worked for them. And I think they're right.
We're speaking with Robin Johnson, political science faculty member at Monmouth College and host of Talking Politics on, it's KBUR, right?
Yeah.
Yes, KBUR in Burlington, Iowa. Amanda Vinicky from WUIS-FM and Illinois Public Radio here with me in the Allstate Showcase studio. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio with Amanda Vinicky from Illinois Public Radio, the State House Bureau in Springfield. And on the phone is Robin Johnson, host of Talking Politics from KBUR in Burlington, Iowa, and also a member of the political science faculty at Monmouth College. And we're talking about the Iowa caucuses, less than 30 days away. Tell me, Robin, what you're seeing about Ted Cruz over there in Iowa, because I think he's a force to be reckoned with. Appears to be very well organized. Has that appeal to the Tea Party / evangelicals there, and a big showing in Iowa, moving past New Hampshire, but then you start entering the southern states, there could be a conceivable path to victory there.
Absolutely. He's really conducted the best campaign on the ground in Iowa so far, I think by far. He came and organized early. He's the best organized candidate. He's raised. He's been a prodigious fundraiser, and he's been in the state as much, if not more, than any other candidate, which you have to do in Iowa for the most part. We'll see whether that's true or not. Trump and Rubio haven't been there as much, and it seems that they've kind of fallen back a little more in the polls. Cruz overtook Trump here recently. Our polling, Monmouth College and KBUR has done some polling, and we were the first to show Cruz making a move back in October. And it's interesting the way he's handled Trump. He's handled him with kid gloves. He's been almost supportive of Trump to some degree in the debates and solicitous of him. And I think it's smart because he's starting to peel off a few of those votes, and he's moved into the lead right now. And, of course, Iowa, is, you know, with the caucus system as opposed to a primary, is all about organization. And the big question is going to be whether Trump can convert his support, which is among a lot of people who don't traditionally participate in, that people that go out on a cold February night and are willing to stand up and be counted publicly in schoolhouses and other places across Iowa.
Well, and that's goes to a point I was going to ask, because you mentioned about the event that Trump held in Burlington, and The big question seems to be, well, one, he's not doing the traditional kind of retail politicking that we always think of when it comes to Iowa. You know, even small coffee shops, those kinds of things, and out on the road, there are these big rallies. And the question becomes, are people there more to see Donald Trump in the way that some people go to NASCAR races waiting to see the crash? are they going there because of the event, or are they going because indeed they might be motivated enough to show up at caucus night?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. He's got some good people working for him in Iowa that have been through this before. Chuck Laudner, who ran Rick Santorum's campaign, ran Rick Santorum's upset win 4 years ago. Is on board with Trump from and has been from the beginning. Sam Clovis, who's very active in conservative circles with good ties with evangelicals, he's on board with Trump. And I know they've made a late surge here to try to get organized at the local level. And I know they recently bought a list of all Republican voters, which was in the news as well. So it may be that they're a little late, but they are trying. I know my students and I, when we went to the Trump rally, just out of curiosity, we went up to a table where they were giving away Trump shirts, but that you had to sign, give your name, email address, and all your pertinent information. So they were taking some of those steps. So I think it's going to be very interesting whether they can get these voters out or not. If they can, It really may change fundamentally the Iowa caucuses in the future, as well as the shape of the Republican Party.
You know, I'll quick add that when Trump made his appearance in Springfield, Illinois, it was free to get in, and really they didn't seem to collect tickets or care whether or not you actually had one. But it was a good mechanism for getting a loaded arena full of people to have given their email addresses and their other personal information. And I know some folks who, to my knowledge, did not donate at all to the Trump campaign, but nonetheless got a Christmas card from candidate Donald Trump. So it seems as if they're using some of those email addresses for something.
Yeah, I was really struck, though, by the choice of music. You know, when you go to these rallies beforehand, they use all kinds of different music. And Trump was playing Elton John, Rocket Man. And I was trying to get the significance of that. But anyway, that's probably beside the point.
Wow.
In Springfield, there was some opera. It was bizarre. I don't know if that was coordinated or what. But yeah, he vacillated all over the place, evidently, with this music choice.
Things that don't
No Rocket Man.
Things that don't require a artist approval or copyright is probably
the key.
What it is.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Well, what do you see out there as far as, you know, quote, establishment candidates? I mean, it seems like Chris Christie is all about New Hampshire. Jeb Bush, who knows? You know, we normally talk about the various paths or silos of candidates, and for establishment, I mean, I don't even know if Marco Rubio falls into that platform.
He kind of goes across, I think, straddles both the you know, the establishment candidates and the more insurgent candidates. But as you know, Rick, you know, 4 years ago, around 62% of the Iowa caucus goers on the Republican side were evangelicals. So there's a natural bent towards candidates of a more conservative bent. The last two winners have been Huckabee and Santorum, who are both way back in the pack now. So that lends itself to candidates like Cruz. Ben Carson had a surge here and has fallen back, although he outraised Cruz this last fourth quarter in fundraising. So he's still alive. It's just when I look at Jeb Bush, you asked about the mainstream candidates, that you just see somebody that's, you know, and I'm going to be interviewing him this week. I'm going to ask him, I mean, it's like, what happened to my party? He's a serious candidate. He had a pretty good record for Republican governor in the 1990s, a leader, an innovator. And normally you would think this guy would be the clearing away front runner. His super PACs dropped $40 million to no avail, and he's stuck in the 5-6% of the vote. It just doesn't look good for him, but yet you just never know. Huckabee did a poll here a couple weeks ago that showed that 70% of Iowa caucus goers could still change their mind before the vote. So it's fluid. I just don't see Bush's path here. Kasich really hasn't been doing much. He's been focused on New Hampshire as well. I think after the Paris attacks and then the San Bernardino attacks, there's been a little more interest in Chris Christie. If there's somebody that could maybe surprise and vault into the top five, it could be Christie. Rubio received a lot of heat for not being in Iowa enough, and he quickly got the message and has been here a little more. He's currently running, I believe, third or fourth in the polls in the low teens. But I don't, you know, at this point, I think Rubio will probably be the top person. He's running at 12% third right now, but he's well behind Cruz and Trump, who are at 31 and 27 in Iowa. It seems like Rubio's the front runner for that establishment vote.
How much of things have changed in this cycle versus even 4 years ago as far as messaging and that kind of thing, where, you know, it used to be, and everybody kind of looked at the fact, like, for example, Jeb Bush raising super PAC raising $65 million, that, you know, the TV and radio domination of commercials, that kind of thing. And it seems to me, when you look at, for Jeb Bush, for example, that there's some real question about the effectiveness of that kind of old standard of advertising.
Yeah. I mean, there's some old-time so-called rules of campaigning in the Iowa caucuses that are being tested here. One is the fact that you got to be here a lot and organize, do what they call the full grass slate, which, as you know, is
yes.
every county, all 99 counties. Cruz, I think, is on his way to doing that and some of the other candidates. But Trump has campaigned mainly by having rallies and free media, as you know. And that's going to be tested to see how well he does. Of course, he is trying to organize late here, but a lot of his campaign has been based on free media. The super PACs, which everybody feared would just engulf politics in Iowa across the nation, have not proven to be very effective. In fact, some of the candidates, the thinking was that super PAC strength would allow candidates like Rick Perry and Scott Walker and others that have already dropped out, it would help them to at least linger through the Iowa caucuses, New Hampshire primary, and it didn't. They dropped out early. Five candidates have dropped out on the Republican side. So I just think the whole Trump attack on political correctness, speaking his mind in a way that most people feel has gone over the line on traditional political discourse, that's being tested as well. So there's going to be a lot of interesting takeaways from this on whether politics has fundamentally changed or whether things revert back to the mean. So it'll be fascinating for all us junkies to watch. The thing to keep in mind on all this, and I was talking about this with a friend of mine recently, when it comes down to, is the turnout, it could be less than 250,000 people decide this on both sides. The Republican turnout in 2012 was 121,000 people. Of course, for Obama, the last competitive Iowa caucus was 08, and it was like 240,000 almost. I think it's going to go back to about the 2004 number of about 124,000, probably less. I think the Republican will be up closer to maybe 130, but you're looking at 250,000 people making a very important decision on who's going to jump out of the gate in both party primaries.
Robin Johnson, political science faculty member at Monmouth College and host of Talking Politics on KBUR in Burlington, Iowa. Robin, thanks so much for joining me. Appreciate the insight, and we'll be talking to you in the days ahead as we get closer to February 1st, caucus day in Des Moines and the rest of Iowa. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
We'll be back with more right after this.